This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into Sports Talk, our Wednesday, May 28th edition, as we get ready for media viewing of Saints OTA Week 2 tomorrow. Seeing on the Saints social media platforms that the team had a little bit of team building, team bonding today, doing some paintball. Charlie, you ever been gone out to paintball?
Like, not since high school.
Yeah, what's funny is you say that. That's the same for me, man. It's been a long time.
Maybe it's been quite some time. But no, I have been. And, you know, they have the day off. So as I kind of mentioned in the flash, they had practice yesterday, and then they have practice the next 2 days. So it's on Thursday and Friday, and that's week two of OTAs, and then they have another week of OTAs as well. So we're in the full swing of Saints offseason stuff. I know that Mike always calls it pajamas and slippers, and you're not really getting too much at OTAs, but it is good to get that feeling that we're kind of inching closer and closer to football season.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, this isn't necessarily any real indication of even competitions, how they're shaking out right now, because these guys aren't in pads.
Right.
There's no contact going on, but it's just nice being out there, getting into that football groove.
Yeah, and that's why when people will ask us, oh, you know, what did you see from Trevor Penning at left guard? No one's going to be able to tell, really. And in all honesty, Mike was right about this. Nobody's going to really be able to tell if Penning's going to work at left guard until you get into real football. And that's like the regular season. So it's going to be a process. We'll keep an eye on what we can keep an eye on throughout the, you know, off-season camps. But, you know, that's all we can really do right now.
It's like the Cajun Cannon said, right now you're kind of looking at those skill position guys and really seeing what they're up to, and especially the guys that maybe finished last season with an injury and how they're bouncing back.
And, I was away last week, but from what I had heard, a lot of positive buzz was about Rashid Shaheed and how, you know, he was kind of looking after that knee injury that he had suffered that ended his season last year.
Yeah, besides the quarterback battle, and it was like, oh, Spencer Rattler was really humming the ball. Tyler Shuck had that really nice pass to Rashid Shaheed.
Right.
But that was a thing that stood out to me, Charles, the fact that, you know, you had a guy coming back from knee surgery and someone that depends on that speed for his game, and sure didn't look like he had lost any kind of step, which is a huge positive.
Because the Saints wide receiver room, to John Hendricks' point from the last hour when we were talking with him, you really are missing a key piece, and it's the possession receiver, the big body guy. At the same time, if they think that Juwan Johnson can effectively serve that role and be a big receiver, which he was a receiver at Oregon before he transferred to being a tight end, once the Saints picked him up as a UDFA a few years ago, if he can still serve that role of being the possession receiver for this team, then it's okay, because you have all this other speed with Rashid coming back, and it looks like he's good to go, and Chris Olave and Brandon Cooks in your receiver room. So there's some interesting things that you can definitely do, and that Kellen will have planned for this upcoming season. You know, just similar to what we were saying last hour, that you have full faith in Jay Johnson with whatever he decides to do with his pitching staff this weekend in regional play. You have full faith in Kellen Moore with whatever he decides to do with his offensive toys, because he's been successful every single spot he's been with his offenses.
Yeah, we mentioned with John Hendricks that need potentially for that bigger wide receiver. He had mentioned that he's more concerned with the depth in the tight end room because of some injuries and question marks there. We talked to Brandon Cooks in the locker room after the first organized team session that we got to witness, and that question came up to him. It was like, what do you think about this group necessarily? You know, the perception is there's a lot of speed there, but there really isn't that big physical guy to make those contested catches. And I love Brandon Cooks just was like, well, who needs to make contested catches if you're basically burning the DBs?
Oh, yeah, catch up. I mean, that's what the...
I can outrun you.
Right, that's kind of the theme of this Saints wide receiver room right now with all the speed that they do have. But, you know, you like to have all facets of your offensive passing attack filled, and that definitely seems to still be a spot that they're missing.
Yeah, with the contested catch player, you know, that was something that was brought up to Kellen Moore as well after the first OTA session. And he mentioned a guy like Cedric Wilson Jr., who has been around him and his system for a while now. We'll be interested to see if he can get more acclimated and be more of a part of this offense than he was last season, because, you know, we really didn't see much from Ced Wilson last year.
Yeah, Cedric was one of the all-airline guys, as we like to call him, Steve, where he looked really, really good in preseason practices and stuff.
Practice.
And we're talking about Cedric Wilson is defining himself as the wide receiver 3 on last year's roster. He just didn't have too much production in his first year with the Black and Gold. And, you know, that has me a little bit hesitant to have too much faith in what he can do in 2025 based off of what we see in practice, because he was really good in practice last year. And there just wasn't much once we got to regular season play.
There wasn't much of anything last year. It was just got this perfect storm of inconsistency and injury. And the Saints had that wonderful first 2 weeks, and everything was just downhill after that.
Exactly. I mean, that's the story of the 2024 Saints. And hopefully, you know, under new leadership and some new faces, a lot of new faces.
Reinvigorated. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what she can hope for as a Saints fan.
Want to hear from you on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. You can sound off 504-260-1870 about the Black and Gold or the NBA playoffs, LSU baseball, whatever you'd like. James and Hammond's been on the line. James, what you got for us today, man?
Well, yeah, I was going to tell you that I think the offensive line is going to be very better because you pick up two guys, free agency, that have been playing. A guy from Tennessee, Dylan Reduce, who played all over the offensive line of Tennessee, was a starter. And you also picked up Clapp again.
Right,
right.
I think both of them are good. I think they can step in and start if Penning doesn't work out or if Ruiz gets hurt. I think those guys are better than the guys we had last year, and Lemieux and the other guy, 61, whatever his name was. Anyway, but and also I think you got a tight end. I think that you drafted late in the round from UCLA. I think he's going to be a surprise to a lot of people for the Saints. I think he's going to be a very good football player.
Yeah, that's Maliki Matavau from the 7th round there.
Yeah.
And I also think 61. Was that McGovern or was that Lucas Patrick?
Lucas Patrick.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. No. And to your point, go ahead, James. Finish your thought.
And I think also that, you know, y'all worry about quarterbacks. You know, a lot of teams drafted rookie quarterbacks and started them and didn't say, "Well, I hope this guy does well." Well, you know, if you have a good offensive line, you know, let me see. You know, there was no guarantee that Daniels was going to be very good last year with the Washington Redskins. They just played well. He's good now. Don't get me wrong, but you know, look at the guy at Chicago. If he gets an offensive line, how good can he be?
Caleb Williams got sacked like 70 times last year, and some of those are on him. Like
I was going to say, holding on to that ball, right?
He's holding on to the ball really long. But yeah, no, I completely get your point.
You know, the point is that, you know, I think this guy is big and strong. I think he's got a good arm. I don't think Rattler's not bad. I think if you get an offensive line that stays healthy and can play, and you run the ball very well, you know, you got a great running back. You know, I think he's one of the best in the NFL. And you got some guys behind him. I think, like y'all said, Neal is a steal of the draft. I think Yawn's going to be good. I think, I don't know, maybe Hilaire's got something left in him. I don't know. He might have something left in him, a guy from LSU, you know?
Oh, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right.
I think the Saints are going to win more than 5 games. I think they're going to win more than 7 games. That's my opinion. I think you're going to win 9 games or more.
We like the positivity, James. You keep that up.
Well, James, listen, that's what we're talking about with this FPI ranking that ESPN's got out with them at 32 behind teams like the Browns and the Titans that are just subject, you know, nightmares. You can't tell me that the Titans have a better roster than the Saints. And similarly with the Browns, I know that they got Myles Garrett and they paid him $40 million a year. And he's one of the best defensive players in football.
They might have the edge to Cleveland with that defense for sure, but that offense is a mess.
Their offense is a disaster. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It feels like the Saints are a little bit too low. There are other teams that are a little bit too high. There's some pieces here, and we'll see what happens and how it all comes together, because as you were mentioning, I think the reason that they're so low on the FPI list is because of the unknowns, and people just don't really know. So they instantly go to, oh, because we're not sure that they're going to be good, we're just going to assume that they're going to be bad, right? With the new hire of Kellen Moore in his first year as an NFL head coach, with the quarterback room the way it is, Tyler Shuck expected to potentially be the starter. We'll see how this quarterback competition plays out. But you're throwing out potentially a rookie second round pick as your starting QB. So they just assume, oh, he's going to be terrible. I mean, you never really know. You got to see it kind of transpire on the field. So it feels like a little bit of an overreaction to have him at 32. I would say that much.
Yeah, to me, you know, that was a big negative everyone kept bringing up with the Saints when they were out trying to, you know, interviewing whoever for their next head coaching position. And that kind of criticism came of, what is this team waiting for? What are they doing? And it was like, well, they had their sights set on a guy that was still in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And made it all the way to the final game. So you kind of had to wait a little longer. And then you look how it shakes out in the end with a guy like Kellen Moore joining this team here. I feel like with all the hires that went on around the NFL, that the Saints are right up there with one of the top names that they ended up landing in the end.
My favorite is still Vrabel going to the Patriots and going back home to New England. I think that's going to work out fantastic. I will say this much, though. Did you see the stuff with Stephon Diggs?
Oh, man.
And how Vrabel said that we have to make good choices on and off the field?
I want to party with Stephon Diggs. I don't know if I want to be a coach for him.
Well, Vrabel's already kind of putting the hammer down. We'll see how long Diva Diggs lasts in New England under Vrabel, because he's not going to tolerate that type of stuff.
Well, the problem was then he doesn't show up for organized team activities, which are voluntary, so whatever there. But then people are diagnosing the video and saying there's a packet with this some kind
Yikes.
Of pink substance that he's holding.
So that's what I will say about Chris Olave, because, you know, sometimes we kind of undervalue his quietness off the field. Because these wide receivers, Steve, a lot of the times the top wide receivers, man, Diva is maybe a little bit of an understatement for
Although
some
Chris,
of these guys.
Chris did get in trouble a little bit with the DUI.
Oh, that's true. Oh, drats.
But that's about the extent of like the scandal he's had off the field.
Yeah, every wide receiver, man. It's something in the water with that position.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking some college baseball. Joe Healy, writer and podcaster for T1Baseball.com, will join us as we break down that Baton Rouge regional and try to map out LSU's road to Omaha. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back here on Sports Talk, I want to remind everybody, WWL is your home for LSU baseball. Tigers are hosting an NCAA regional this weekend at Alec Box Stadium. The four teams in that matchup, including LSU, Dallas Baptist, Rhode Island, and Little Rock. First matchup is against the Trojans Friday, 2 o'clock, right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app, helping us break down that and a whole lot more with the NCAA tournament and getting into full swing. Joe Healy, writer and podcaster for D1Baseball.com. Joe, what do you know? How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. It's a busy week. Not a lot of sleep happening as of late, but that's okay. Like, this is just that time of year, and we know that it's going to be that way, and we love it, or we also wouldn't be in this business.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we get into the regular season finally. We're all looking forward after that long break of getting into baseball, and it just goes by so quickly, and we're past the conference tournament now and into, you know, getting into the NCAA tournament side of things. How did you feel that the committee did with the seating-wise, with everything, with the brackets?
Yeah, I thought they actually did a really good job. One of the cleaner ones that I think I've seen since I've not only been doing this job, but just been following college baseball. There really wasn't any major gripes or things that, you know, that we could really be critical of. You know, in the past, we've had issues with things like, you know, it seems like if you had an AD on the committee, then, you know, you kind of got a favorable draw. We didn't really see much evidence of that. We've seen over-reliance on RPI in the past, and we didn't really see too much evidence of that. We've seen really unbalanced fields where certain regionals looked super loaded and some looked super soft, and we didn't really see a lot of that. I mean, there are always going to be hurt feelings. I think UConn, Xavier got left out. You know, those are teams I think that have decent cases, or Georgia Tech or TCU thought maybe they should be hosting, but there in none of those cases was there anything egregious. So I don't think we could have really asked for a whole lot more, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, the head of the committee this year was J.R. Teagues, who was the head baseball coach at Southeastern Louisiana for a long time, and is now their AD. So he understands kind of some of the nuances of baseball that I think some other committee chairs, although well-meaning, didn't necessarily understand and led to some of those, what we viewed as mistakes in previous brackets.
Yeah, and Southeastern Louisiana was one of the first four teams out, and so he went by the numbers, and he had his own formula, and the committee, you know, stayed with it, and there wasn't any kind of questions about the integrity there, like there was maybe with the NCAA basketball tournament and the UNC thing, but that's a whole different conversation. Joe, I wanted to get your thoughts. The Baton Rouge Regional, LSU gets the sixth seed, which there were some questions kind of late in the process as if they were going to be a top eight national seed. I never really bought it. I saw some projections that had them as low as like 10 and 11. I just didn't really see it. I think there was maybe a little bit too much over-reliance on the RPI, which wasn't necessarily there. But I want to get your thoughts on the field that they got in the Baton Rouge Regional at Alec Box Stadium, bringing in two-seeded Dallas Baptist, three-seeded Rhode Island, and then four-seeded Little Rock, who they open the regional with tomorrow or on Friday.
Yeah, I think it's a good draw, all things considered. You know, Little Rock's a team that's the Cinderella story. They were the eighth seed in their conference tournament and got hot at the right time. You know, they do have a good frontline starting pitcher in Jackson Wells. I assume that LSU will see, but that's not anybody that LSU, you know, I think will have too much trouble with past maybe a couple of innings where they're still getting adjusted. But in general, that's a good draw. And then Rhode Island is a team that their RPI is in the top 70, but I think they're not as good as that RPI and their seeding as a three seed suggests they are. Like, I think that they're perhaps overseeded as a three. I understand why they are a three, but I'm just not sure they're quite that good. They seem like more of a four to me. So that's obviously good for LSU. And DBU is tricky, right? I mean, anybody who follows college baseball knows what DBU is about. They're very physical offense. Their first handful of arms are, you know, kind of SEC quality type of arms, but the depth just isn't there. And they play in CUSA, so they're not used to seeing the type of talent they're going to see when and if they come up against LSU in this regional. So I really like LSU's draw. I think it's one of the softer ones, still pretty balanced, but one of the softer ones among the ones that are hosted by SEC teams.
One of the big things everybody's LSU fans are at least talking about going into this regional is, what is Jay Johnson going to do on the mound in game one against Little Rock? Some people are feeling that they shouldn't go with one of the main guys in Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson. And personally, I just don't see Jay Johnson not going with one of those two to start this matchup.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Like, if I was coaching LSU, which I'm horribly underqualified for, so thank goodness that's not happening, but I think I'd look at it differently. I think I'd look at it kind of like, you know, some teams do where they pitch off. Even a two-seed, so Oklahoma has already announced, by the way, that they're going to save Tyson Witherspoon for a potential winner's bracket game against UNC at the Chapel Hill Regional. And so if I'm LSU, you're not in this regional to win a couple games. Like, the point is to win the regional. So I would always pitch who answers what best answers the question of what's gives us the best chance to win this regional. And for me, that is not pitching one of your top couple of arms against Little Rock. Now, that being said, I always go back to the example of in 2023 when LSU opened with a Tulane team that was like 14 and 40 or something, and they still threw Paul Skeens.
Right.
And I get that that's a little bit tricky because, okay, it's Tulane, it's a rivalry game, like, okay, sure. But, you know, if Ty Floyd couldn't have beaten Tulane, then there were bigger problems. So I'm with you in that I think Jay Johnson is going to play it by the book. He tends to be a traditionalist in that way. But if it were me, I think I would approach it a little differently.
Yeah, and Joe, I just want to get your thoughts on this LSU team coming home and having the home path to Omaha, so to speak. Because, I mean, you saw them in Hoover. We've seen them on the road all season long. They've struggled offensively away from the box. But when they're at the box, it's a completely different story. It's a team that averages almost 10 runs per game at the box at home. And I know that you can throw in the midweeks and stuff like that, 30-5 record, but 12-3 in SEC play. And it's not even like the level of competition because they took 2 or 3 from Tennessee and they took 2 or 3 from Arkansas, two other regional hosts. At home at the box. I just want to get your thoughts on this LSU offense, because the stat that we keep coming back to is that in, you know, the games that they've scored 5 or more runs, the pitching staff is top 10 in the country as far as team ERA at 3.72. When they score 5 or more runs in games, they're 36-2 this season. And with how they hit at the box, it feels like this is a good path for them to get back to the College World Series.
Yeah, I totally agree. Also, just the regional across from them, I like Clemson's team a lot. I don't think it's I don't think the way that team is assembled is probably assembled to give LSU any more trouble than anybody else would, right? I mean, obviously they're good, so it could be a tight series, but I just think that's a pretty decent matchup there too. And on the offense piece, like, I'm with you, and I think I've said this on your air a couple times this season, of, you know, this LSU lineup, especially when Jared Jones wasn't going good, and he's going better now, but when he wasn't going good, it was like, this lineup doesn't really scare me the way that last year's lineup did, or some of these other, you know, lineups that LSU has had in recent years. But then as I started to kind of zoom out a little bit, especially when SEC teams have gone on the road, like, that's kind of the way this league has been this year. Like, Tennessee lost how many series at home? Like, 3 or 4? And that's just unheard of for them. And the offense was pretty flat for them, you know, in those situations. And so I say that to say that I just look at these offenses this year. And yes, when Arkansas is really rolling, like, their offense is really, really impressive. But outside of that, like, there just really aren't these offensive juggernauts that are consistent, right? So, like, Tennessee is actually maybe better on the road in that regard, but Georgia hits great at home and not good at all on the road. So I just think this is kind of this year in the SEC. I'm interested to see what happens next year. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but to see if this is more of a trend or if this is kind of a one-off just because so much elite talent left the league after last year. But offenses across the league have just not been consistent this season, because I think every local market I've been on the radio or podcast or whatever for has asked me what's wrong with their offense this year. So I just think it's something that everyone has kind of dealt with, and I'm not really sure why, but it just kind of is what it is, I think.
One of the guys that has been mashing for the Tigers this year, and I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but maybe these extra opportunities for a guy like Ethan Frye, his first two seasons at LSU, no home runs, comes up with 12 this year, 43 ribbies, and has definitely been one of those guys who's been great at Alec Box Stadium. But just curious what you've seen in his development, and why do you think he's just taken that surge this year? Is it just because he's just getting more at-bats?
I think that's some of it, and I think it's one of the things that Jay Johnson and his staff are masterful about doing, is that, you know, they're very intentional about their roster and guys they continue to bring along. I've said it before that even within the course of a season, no player is, you know, no player is buried forever. I think about, you know, just, you know, the big Dalton Beck hit, right, where it's like, this is a guy who hasn't hit at all this season, and they just pull him off the bench and, you know, basically dust the cobwebs off of him to send him up there to the plate. And he comes through. The staff is really good at keeping everybody fresh, keeping everybody engaged. And the players understand that, hey, my time is coming, whether that means within the course of a season or that, hey, this year might not be my year, but I'm going to be ready next year. And so this is kind of just part and parcel, I think, Ethan Frye, of like a guy that Jay Johnson was good about saying, creating expectations, helping him understand what his role was in previous years, and then helping him understand, hey, this is your shot. Like, you really got an opportunity here, and he's taken it and run with it. And I'm not enough of a scout or an evaluator to really do the film breakdown on what Ethan Frye physically is doing better or doing differently. But what I can tell you is that he was in a situation where Jay Johnson said, here's your opportunity. Let's run with it. You are ready for this now. And then Ethan Frye has the belief that, yeah, I am ready for this. And I think we've seen it on the field.
So, Joe, the stat that I also go back to as far as regional hosts is that, you know, since they changed the format back in 1999, and this is a large sample size of 400 regionals, that basically 67% of regional hosts advanced to super regional round. But I want to get your thoughts on some of the more difficult regionals and which teams that are hosting you think could be on upset alert.
The one I keep going back to is Ole Miss. That one feels tricky to me from a couple of standpoints. One is their 4 seed is Murray State, and Murray State I don't think has the pitching to be a real threat there, and you know that maybe that's famous last words, but what I can tell you is their offense is legit, and so Ole Miss is probably going to have to throw Hunter Elliott in game one and burn him, because I don't think you can get cute with how good Murray State's offense is. So they're already going to be working from, hey, we've got to use our ace in game one, and then you stack on top of that, Western Kentucky has one of the best pitching staffs in the country, and it's real stuff on their pitching staff. It's not just, you know, kind of mid-major, mid-80s guys. And then you got the Georgia Tech piece where it's like Georgia Tech won the ACC. They very easily could have hosted. And, oh, by the way, their head coach is retiring, and there's the whole emotional aspect of, hey, we want to go out there and get our retiring head coach to Omaha. I kind of compare it to when Paul Maneri left LSU in 2021. Now, they didn't get to Omaha, but they came back from losing the opening game in that Corvallis regional to get to a super regional. And so that can be a powerful thing when you have a beloved coach. And everything I understand is that the players love Danny Hall at Georgia Tech. That can be a powerful thing. So I don't think the committee did Ole Miss a whole lot of favors by drawing that particular group of teams.
Yeah, they gave him a host, but I'm right there with you, Joe. It's a real tough regional. And the idea of potentially getting a Georgia Tech, Georgia Super, I mean, that would be a ton of fun. I'm really rooting for that as well. But we'll see what happens there. I also wanted to get your thoughts. I'm a Sun Belt guy because I'm a UL grad. Louisiana's not in the bracket this year. They kind of had a down year after a really good year last year. I want to get your thoughts on Southern Miss and Coastal Carolina as regional hosts. I feel like Coastal, you know, getting the 13 seed felt a little bit low. I know that I was watching and keeping up with D1's kind of postseason projections, and the debate was if they were going to be a top 8 national seed or if they were going to be right on that line below kind of the top 7 felt locked in, and if they were going to sneak in as the 8 seed. But they fall all the way down to 13 despite having a really good year. And I've heard you also talk about Coastal as well, Joe, that, you know, it's not just the offense that they've had in years past, but it's also a really good pitching staff, and the numbers back that up too. So I think Coastal is a really dangerous, you know, host despite getting Florida as their draw, which is really tough too. And then Southern Miss is a 16 seed getting Alabama in their regional too. I think it's a lot of fun with these Sunbelt hosts.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I thought they were both underseeded. Coastal feels more like an 8-9, 8-10 kind of team, and Southern Miss feels like a 13-15 type of deal. So I thought they both got underseeded as far as what I thought they should have been. And yeah, I mean, they're both really good. I saw them at the Sun Belt tournament and was kind of enamored with both of them because they're both more well-rounded than they usually are, right? So, like, you talk about the Coastal piece where it's like we're used to them mashing, and it's like, well, not enough pitching. And then with Southern Miss, it's like, man, they can really pitch it. But, you know, I go back to that Super Regional against Ole Miss in 22 where they got shut out in both games. They just don't hit enough. Well, both teams this year are more well-rounded. And Coastal in particular is impressive to me because I think with just a couple of exceptions, I think every SEC team minus a couple would trade their rotation for Coastal's straight up because it's real stuff. It's future pros. Cameron Flukey, Jacob Morrison are future pros. And Riley Eichhoff is like the perfect veteran Sunday guy who just throws a ton of strikes. So they're really talented there. Caden Bodine's maybe the best catcher in the country. And Southern Miss has J.B. Middleton. Like Southern Miss is probably going to be able to save J.B. Middleton to throw against Alabama, and J.B. Middleton is one of the best pitchers in the country this year. So, and what a nightmare for, you know, Auburn is the number 4 overall seed. You're feeling pretty good about it. Oh, by the way, if things hold serve, you're going to get Coastal in your place next weekend. And that could be a nightmare just because I do think Coastal is a Omaha quality team and maybe they don't get there, but if I'm Auburn, like that's just an absolute, you know, one of the worst possible kind of second half of the 9-16. Coastal is one of the worst possible ones in terms of who you could be matched up against.
My last one for you, Joe, is that I'm looking through the bracket. I'm picking a lot of regional hosts to get through. The 67% thing just stays in my mind every time I'm filling out one of these. But as far as the 2-seed lines, like Georgia Tech is interesting to me as the ACC champ. TCU, who could have been a host, is really interesting. And the Corvallis regional against that Oregon State team. I think that's a really tough regional draw for the Beavers as well. I want to get your thoughts, though, on the Florida State regional. Mississippi State going there as a 3-seed. And then Northeastern with a gaudy 48-9 record and a 27-game winning streak is just unbelievable. And then you look a little bit into their numbers, and their team pitching staff ERA is ridiculous. It's like a sub-3 team ERA. And you can kind of understand why they're as good as they are. So, you know, some of these regional hosts that, yes, you know, you're picking a majority of them to get through, but some of these 2-seeds are also very enticing.
Yeah, you named it. You're on it with some of the ones that I'm interested in. Georgia Tech, TCU, definitely in the mix there. Yeah, Northeastern, man, like, I'm excited to watch them because, frankly, for a number of reasons, I just didn't see a lot of them this year. One of them is that their home games get played on Flow Sports, and you know, I don't want to get into that. But, you know, it makes it harder. And, you know, we had them ranked last year, and they underachieved. We didn't have them ranked this year, and now they're great. And that's not the first time this kind of thing has happened, where the years in which we're really excited about them feels like they fall flat, and then the years where we don't necessarily see it coming, they're excellent. But the flip side of that, too, is that they've not played well in regionals. You know, this is not the first year. Now, this is the best year they've had, but this is not the first year they've gone into regionals with a really impressive record and some really impressive stats, and they've kind of fallen on their face before. And so I'm kind of interested to see what team shows up to take on Mississippi State in that opener, because if they played a type, that's obviously a tough draw for Mississippi State, but I also think they're capable of winning that regional. Like, everything I've heard from people who've seen them in person say, it's real. Like, it's not just they play in a mediocre league and they're beating up on a bunch of bad teams. It's real talent there. So I'm kind of fascinated to see what goes on there, because I do think there is a scenario where we see this from time to time. I think about, I hate to bring it up for your LSU fan listeners, but when Stony Brook got into a regional and we very quickly realized, like, oh, yeah. Oh, we had no idea this team was that good. Like, it wasn't a fluke. They were just better. And I do wonder if maybe that's what we see with Northeastern when they show up in Tallahassee, is just they take the field and immediately realize, oh, wait, this is the best team in this regional.
Believe me, Joe, fans know not to overlook anybody bringing up that Stony Brook matchup for sure.
That's right. Yeah, they really did put everybody on notice with that. We can always go back to that example.
Always great stuff, Joe. Thank you for carving out some time during this hectic schedule week. Appreciate you, and look forward to watching some ball and talking to you more. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Healy, writer and podcaster for D1Baseball.com. You got to follow him, folks, on Twitter, at Joe Healy, D1. Great stuff there from all the gang at D1Baseball.com. We are definitely huge fans of the site and what they put out there. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll talk a little about the NBA playoffs. Game tipping off against the Minnesota T-Wolves in OKC. Thunder will keep you up to date with that right after this on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Back here on Sports Talk, talking a little bit NBA playoffs right now, and I think Tyrese Halliburton heard what you had to say about him the other day, Charlie.
Man, I just said he's not like a top 15-ish
and
player.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to show you with a triple-double.
Yeah, I look like a top 10 player tonight, a top 5 even. He was unbelievable. I think that's – I saw that it was the first game in NBA history, or at least postseason history, I think, where a player has gone over like 30 points, 15 assists, 10 rebounds, and didn't have a turnover.
Wow.
I mean, he was ridiculous last night. And yeah, when Tyrese Halliburton is playing aggressive – that Indiana Pacers team is just different, Steve. I mean, there's so many teams that are kicking themselves about not getting Tyrese Halliburton, and this is what sticks out to me. If you go back to the 2020 NBA draft, Tyrese Halliburton was the 12th overall pick that year. The Pelicans had picked 13 and got Kyra Lewis.
Oof.
And
wow.
That's kind of stings seeing how well he's developed. And that was a weird draft, too. Tyrese Halliburton, I think, slid a little bit, but the Pelicans were one spot away from him. And that dude is a complete maestro. I've said it before. He's like an old-school type of point guard where all these other players he's trying to make better, and he does make better, but then he also has the ability to just pop off and have a ridiculous game like he had in Game 4 against the Knicks. He's supremely impressive. The major reason why the Indiana Pacers are likely going to be going to the NBA Finals this year, where, you know, we'll see what happens tonight, Steve, but it could be against the OKC Thunder, who could book their ticket.
Yeah, Pacers now up in that series against the Knicks, 3-1 after winning 130-121 last night. Another series that's 3-1 right now could be ending. Like you mentioned, the Thunder currently have a 7-3 lead over the T-Wolves. That game just started. Sorry, 11-3 now. 7 minutes left in the first quarter, and it's going to be hard for the T-Wolves, I feel like, to get anything going tonight against the Thunder squad. That they definitely smell that blood in the water, and I think they want to close things out at home tonight for sure.
Minnesota's chance in this series was Game 4, and it just fell by the wayside. If you could have gotten it to 2-2. Heading back to OKC, there's maybe a discussion to be had.
A glimmer of hope, right.
That this series could go potentially to 6 or 7. Well, it would be guaranteed to go to 6 games, but you could potentially get it to a winner-take-all Game 7, right? Now you're looking at this like OKC should close this out, and OKC should win it in 5 games, and it will be done and dusted. And unfortunately, on the opposite side, maybe the Knicks will have something to say, down 3-1 in their series against Indiana. But are we going to get a conference finals to Game 6 this year, Steve? Like, that's the hope.
Doesn't feel like it,
but
though.
But it just doesn't feel like it. It feels like the NBA finals are set. And maybe something happens and the Timberwolves can really pull something out, a rabbit out of the hat, so to speak. They're already down 11-3, as you mentioned, and they're shooting 1 of 11 in this game. OKC's defense is just ridiculous, Steve. There was a stat that I had pulled up that I read off a little bit earlier when we were talking with Mark Cook.
Right.
The Thunder, in 15 games this postseason, are plus 95 in turnover differential. The record for the NBA history is the 2019 Raptors, who won it all that year. They're plus 79 in that postseason run, and that was in 24 games. The Thunder have played 15 games, and they're plus 95 in turnover differential. They force a ton of turnovers. They don't turn the ball over themselves, and that's just a winning formula. I mean, you got to give them credit for what they've built there.
Yeah, looking right now for the Thunder, it's Chet Holmgren leading the way with 7 points. Say Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, of course, right behind him there with 4. And Hartenstein has the other 2 right now. Thunder up 13-7 early on here in this matchup. But definitely expecting when we're talking tomorrow, Charlie, that we're saying that OKC, the Western Conference top team during the regular season, has now advanced to the NBA Finals.
Denver had their shot at them.
The winner take all
Game 7, and that was the chance to knock out this OKC team. I don't think anybody's beating them now.
We'll take a break and wrap things up right after this. Stay tuned on WWL Sports Talk. Wrapping things up on Sports Talk, looking forward to heading home, watching the rest of this NBA game between the Thunder and T-Wolves to see if the Thunder can close things out and then get a nice rest in as we've got media viewing of the second week of Saints organized team activities tomorrow. Join us tomorrow at 4 on Sports Talk. The Cajun Cannon will share his notes from the OTA session. Also hear from head coach Kellen Moore and some select players. Sports Illustrated NFL writer Gilberto Mazzano will join us at 5:20. Also, plus the Pacers, can they punch their ticket to the NBA Finals in Madison Square Garden? We'll talk about all that tomorrow's show. For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Have a great night, and see you tomorrow with more Saints news. Hoot at, folks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.